Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And we have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Dr. Paul Conant, who was a professor of chemistry, had given up his position, and he's working full-time to try to educate the American people about the dangers of water fluoridation. And now, of course, they're fumigating our wheat with a fluoride gas, or fluorine, something of the sort, and terribly toxic. In fact, well, I'm going to let Dr. Conant explain to you, because the story is really so incredible that you wonder, how could this be going on, and where's Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and 60 Minutes and 2020? I mean, why aren't they telling the American people that we're being poisoned with the fluoride residual in the wheat? Dr. Conant, please tell our listeners about this. Is the most incredible thing.
Yes, Dr. Stan. Thanks for having me back on your program. Yes, sulfuryl fluoride is the compound, and many people may have heard that as Vicane, which has been used for many years to fumigate buildings. And for many years, Dow Chemical, that manufactures this product, has stated that it shouldn't be used on food. Now they've turned around, and they are using this on food in warehouses and processing plants, not out in the open, but in these processing plants. And in the process, they've had to get what we call tolerances from the EPA for this use. That is the permitted levels allowed on a whole range of food products. And the levels that are being allowed by the EPA are just preposterous, to say the least. I'll give you two examples. 130 parts per million on wheat flour, which is used in all kinds of things, from bread to cakes, to pizzas, so we get huge exposure to that flour, and 900 parts per million on powdered eggs, and one-third of the powdered eggs consumed in this country is from the powdered form. 900 parts per million, and to put that into perspective, the level of fluoride used in toothpaste is 1,000 parts per million, and you're told on the back of a tube of toothpaste that you shouldn't swallow it. You should only use a pea-sized amount, and you shouldn't swallow it. And here we have powdered eggs, which is equivalent of literally hundreds of pea-sized amounts. And, of course, we're not told to spit out powdered eggs or omelets or whatever we make from those eggs. This is sheer lunacy. And to get there, they have just absolutely turned science upside down, inside out, totally dishonest in my view. They've actually have manipulated the standards such that now they are claiming that a breastfed infant or an infant can get 10 times more fluoride than an adult, that the safe daily dosage for an infant can be 10 times higher than an adult. This is equivalent to saying if 1,000 milligrams is safe for an adult, then 10,000 milligrams is safe for a child. It's absolutely preposterous.
But are there any scientific studies to verify what they're saying?
Oh, absolutely not. No, it's sheer chicanery. They've just manipulated the mathematics. When we first got involved with this, when I say we, it's the Fluoride Action Network, and our website is fluoridealert.org. When we first got involved, they had a...
I'm going to have to interrupt you there, because we're going to have to go to a break. We're going to bring some other stations on, and we'll repeat a little of what you just said, because it's so vitally, vitally important. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest today is Dr. Paul Conant, a formerly professor of chemistry, who's given up his tenured position to lead the effort to educate the American people about the dangers of fluoride and the fact that it's not only in your toothpaste, it's not only in your water, but now they're using it to fumigate powdered eggs. They're using it to fumigate wheat, and of course, at levels that are very, very equivalent to what you have in your toothpaste. Now, you're told if you were to swallow a pea-shaped size a bit of your toothpaste, it says right on the tube that you should go to a poison control center. But they're doing this with the wheat. They're doing this with the powdered eggs. And they're not telling you what's going on. And Dr. Condit's on the front lines of this battle. He's written repeated, you know, requests to the FDA and other organizations to protect the safety of the American people. There are no scientific studies. They know what they're doing. And, of course, all of Dr. Condit's efforts to bring out the truth have been suppressed. Would you explain to our leaders, now these are new people. They didn't hear what you said before.
Yep.
What are the levels of that they're producing for fluoride? This is the substance they use for fumigating homes.
Yep.
They use this to fumigate homes, and you know nobody goes into that building it for some time, you know, until all the gas is gone.
Yep.
But now they're using it, and they're leaving a residual in our wheat, a residual in our powdered eggs. What are those levels?
Well, it's extraordinary. They're allowing the EPA pesticide division is allowing them. Dow Chemical to have, Dow AgroScience, I should say, 900 parts per million in powdered eggs, and that's only just short of the 1,000 parts per million in toothpaste, as you mentioned. And they're allowing 130 parts per million in wheat flour, which, of course, is used in everything from bread to pizza. So this is extraordinary. We are appealing this, by the way. We've got pro bono legal representation in Washington, and we are appealing this, but this is just going on forever. So, you know, it's just extraordinary. But it's only a small part, Dr. Stan, of the whole extraordinary mess and protection that's been offered to fluoride by the U.S. government for over 60 years. As you know, when the U.S. Public Health Service endorsed fluoridation in 1950, there were no health studies that had been published other than dental fluorosis, and none of the trials had even been completed. So it was launched with a wing and a prayer in 1950, and the U.S. government has not sought to do the kind of basic health studies.
Hold that thought, please. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Dr. Condit was just simply pointing out, you know, what they're doing as far as of the fumigation of powdered eggs, the fumigation, certainly, of wheat. And this is actually underway at the present time, isn't it? Most of the supplies of wheat and powdered eggs we're getting today are contaminated with the poisonous fluoride?
I'm sorry, Sam, I didn't...
Are they actually doing this today? In other words, if we were to
buy powdered... Well, I believe so. I mean, that I just, you know, it's very difficult for me to get a straight answer from these people. You would think that would be a fairly easy question to answer. As I said, we are intervening. We have got a pro bono legal representation from a top law firm. This is very exciting. But this seems to be going on forever and ever and ever. And I've said to our colleagues at the Environmental Working Group, they're in the lawsuit along with, not lawsuit yet, with the appeal Beyond Pesticides and the Fluoride Action Network, I said, you know, if they're not putting it in, they can take as long as they like. They can spin their wheels forever as far as I'm concerned, but if they're putting it in, we have to rush this process along. As I say, I haven't got a clear answer from anybody, but we'll keep looking at it. I must admit that we are our major preoccupation at the moment, that suit is going on, or our effort is going on, but our major preoccupation is with this ridiculous continuation of water fluoridation. And there's good news and bad news on that front, Dr. Stan. The bad news is that in November, with practically no public participation, with certainly no unbiased review of the literature, the Metropolitan Water District in Southern California, which stretches from the suburbs of Los Angeles all the way down to San Diego, fluoridated another 18 million people. Just like that, 18 million people. This is a bureaucracy, it's unelected, and boom, they go ahead and fluoridate 18 million more people. That's more people than I've tried to help in 11 years in this whole issue. And by the way, when you said I'd left St. Lawrence University, absolutely true. I just retired. I reached retiring age of 65, and I retired, and so now I'm Professor Emeritus of Environmental Chemistry and Toxicology at St. Lawrence University.
All right, fine. Well, I'm really so pleased that you're out there on the front lines of this battle. And for those of you who are listening on it, you can go to fluoridealert.org, fluoridealert.org on the Internet. Don't go to fluoridealert.com, and don't go to fluoridealert.net, because those have been taken by the American Dental Association, and those websites will tell you how good, you know, water fluoridation is and how healthy the children's teeth are. And why would they surround your website with their websites? Do you think they're trying to keep the American people from getting the truth?
Absolutely. I mean, that's been their strategy for many, many years. Both the American Dental Association and the Center for Disease Control do everything in their power to keep the people away from the science, the real science. And they have two strategies for doing this, which I think are collapsing around their heels. One is to do it by endorsements. You have to accept fluoridation as the best thing since sliced bread because all these organizations endorse it. Of course, that's very silly because many of them have never reviewed the subject, and certainly not recently, and many of them are funded by the U.S. Public Health Service, so their endorsement means very little. The second approach is to claim that the opponents of water fluoridation, a bunch of crazies, Flat Earth Society, junk science proponents, and so on and so on and so on. And in actual fact, on that front, they're really coming unstuck, as they say, because we have this National Research Council 507-page review that was published in March of 2006, which said the safe drinking water standard is not protective of health and needs to be lowered. That was a major document, 1,000 references. And then following on that, this January's issue of Scientific American, there's an 8-page article which highlights this National Research Council report and quotes the chairman of the National Research Council Review, Dr. John Dool. It's a devastating quote from their point of view because he essentially points out that when they looked at this, they were really surprised at how few studies actually demonstrated the safety of this practice. And there was so many studies that should have been done and still need to be done. And that's why he says there's a lot of controversy about it, because they haven't demonstrated that it's safe. They haven't done the most basic studies. And all of that coupled with the fact, and people will find this when they go to our website, fluoridealert.org, make sure you spell fluoride right, F-L-U, not F-L-O, a very common mistake there, fluoridealert.org. If you go there, you will find a professional statement calling for an end to water fluoridation worldwide. And thank you, Dr. Monteith, because I know you've signed it. Over 1,480 scientists and dentists and doctors and nurses, all kinds of professionals, including water department officials, including PhDs from a vast range of subjects, including leading environmental activists from around the world, have signed this, and it goes up steadily every day. So we're very, very excited about that. And I urge anybody that knows a doctor, a dentist, a nurse, a pharmacist, you think anything in the dental, medical, academic field, please get them to sign this statement. It's really important to us.
Well, of course, the problem is that the fluoride is physiologically active. It's like a drug. It's the active component within Prozac. It's a fluoride compound. But, I mean, fluoride certainly has a profound impact on the mind. It has a profound impact on the thyroid, on the endocrine system, on the reproductive system. It affects and attacks every, literally, organ system in the human body. Why would you put something like that in the water? I mean, if you want to treat children's teeth and you really think fluoride is good, why not just give this to the children, you know, before they get the permanent teeth in? But are there really any studies that show it even helps effectively to prevent dental caries in children?
Well, you know, it's absolutely preposterous practice. It's the worst kind of medicine that you could think of, where you can't control the dose, you can't control who gets it, whether they're very young, very old, very sick, have poor kidney function. And by the way, kidney patients are getting increasingly concerned that they haven't been warned about this. Everybody gets it. You can't oversee the patient. As I say, you can't control the dose, and add to the fact that we're getting fluoride from other sources, it's probably the worst example of public health practice that's ever been envisioned. We've never used a public water supply to deliver medication before. I beg your pardon. We had one short experiment with iodine, and so many people got overactive thyroid situation, hyperthyroidism, that they had to stop that. But other than that, this is the only time we've deliberately used the water supply to deliver medication. Add that to that, the fact that the Center of Disease Control, and there have been front page articles in the Journal of the American Dental Association, which now confirm that the predominant benefit of fluoride is topical, not systemic, topical. It works from the outside of the tooth, not from inside of the body. So if you want fluoride, it's universally available in fluoridated toothpaste. Brush it on your teeth and spit it out. People are even concerned about that, by the way. But it's certainly more rational than putting it in the drinking water. Now, as far as the benefits are concerned, you add one layer of preposterousness on top of another. Because the largest survey ever conducted in the United States, which cost a huge amount of taxpayers' money, well over $3 million, conducted by the National Institute of Dental Research, which is pro-fluoridation, looked at 84,000 children in, 39,000 children, 84 communities. And all they could find was the average saving for children from 5 to 17 was 0.6 of one tooth surface out of over 100 tooth surfaces in a child's mouth. And that's the best they could do. Studies since then in Australia have found even less, 0.16 to 0.3 of one tooth surface. And a most recent study in Australia of 10,000 children found no difference in permanent teeth for children who consumed bottled water or rainwater all their lives or fluoridated water. And rather than admitting this, that this whole thing has been a practice, it's like that song from the Vietnam War, and the big fool says, push on, wading through the muddy, muddy, whatever it was, but the big fool says, push on, you keep going, you keep doing it, because you're frightened to admit that you made a mistake. You're frightened of losing face. The U.S. Public Health Service is frightened that if they admit that this practice that they waxed lyrical about for so many years has been a complete failure, that it doesn't reduce tooth decay, and now there's these alarming signals that it could be damaging health, they're frightened it's going to affect their other programs like vaccination and so on. And, you know, by the way, you mentioned in your preamble to this, in your question, that of the various tissues that are impacted, lowering of thyroid function, that was one issue that Dr. John Doole, the chairman of the National Research Council, pulled out as being of concern to him. I'm concerned about impacts on the brain. We now have 40 animal studies which indicate that fluoride damages the brain. One was conducted at one part per million, which is the level we use in water. And there are now over a dozen studies from China, from Iran, from India, from Mexico, which indicates that fluoride lowers IQ in children.
I wonder if that has anything to do with the fact that when our students graduate from high school here in American high schools, they can't compete effectively with students from so many other countries in the world, in Europe, where, of course, they refuse to allow them to poison the water, and this is what they're doing. It affects. We'll be back in just a moment and get Dr. Conant's response to that. Is it possible that we're damaging the minds of our children? Dr. Conrad, would you want to pick up the story?
Yes. Well, I think it's an important point that you make, because people in the United States are beguiled with the notion that if they don't fluoridate their water, like Santa Cruz, I understand, is not fluoridated.
Yes, fortunately. Oh, we had an alliance between the far left and the far right, and it was a tight race, but thank goodness for the environmentalists here. We combined our forces and we managed to vote down the effort on the part of the city council to fluoridate the water. Thank goodness we do not have fluoridated water here.
Congratulations. That is terrific. But one of the strategies they use is that, well, there's several, but the big one is, you know, so many people in the United States are drinking fluoridated water. So many big cities are drinking fluoridated water. If you don't do it, you're against progress. You're against poor children. You know, that's another argument. You have to do it because of equity. Well, I'm all for equity, but it's poor kids who are most vulnerable to fluoride's toxic effects, including dental fluorosis, which now impacts one-third of American children, if you would believe. And it's poor families that are trapped. If they get fluoridated, they can't afford reverse osmosis or distillation or bottled water to avoid fluoride. So you trap them, and it's worse for them, so far from equity. But the issue is, I mean, going back to that first argument, you should do it because everyone's doing it, is absolute rubbish, because most of the people in the world drinking fluoridated water live in North America. The vast majority of countries do not fluoridate their water. Only 8 countries in the world fluoridate more than 50% of the water. 50% of the population is drinking fluoridated water, because the United States being one. Only 8. The vast majority of European countries do not fluoridate their water. And yet, according to the World Health Organization figures, the tooth quality in these non-fluoridated countries is just as good, if not better, than countries that do fluoridate. So, again, the whole thing is so much nonsense and PR, and of course it was championed by the father of public relations, the father of propaganda, Edward Bernays, in the 50s. People don't realize that, but this was a real snow job on the American public, and it still continues to be a snow job.
In fact, it was Edward Bernays who, of course, was responsible for the millions of women who have died of lung cancer because, of course, he was hired by American Tobacco Company to get women to smoke. And so they went to Hollywood. They had everybody smoking there. All the women were smoking. And then he came up with a nice little ditto like, don't reach for a sweet, which reach for, I've forgotten what the thing was. Don't reach for a sweet, reach for a smoke. And that's how, of course, they were able to get the women smoking. Using all these psychological programs, he did the same thing with water fluoridation. I wonder how many people he's going to kill because of that. But millions of women have died because of Edward Bernays' very successful program of getting women to begin smoking so they would get lung cancer, too. Yep. Why would he have done so? Well, I guess he was well paid. And
I know. It's absolutely scandalous. He had suffragettes marching down Fifth Avenue smoking to demonstrate that this was freedom for women to do this. He also knew in those days that you had to get the people in the white coats to endorse your sickening products. And so he had doctors and dentists, thousands of them, endorsing smoking.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, Dr. Conrad has simply been talking about the propaganda campaign that was launched by a man named Edward Bernays, who is, I think he was the nephew of Sigmund Freud, but the propaganda campaign to get people to accept water fluoridation with no scientific justification at all. And as we simply pointed out, of course, that millions of women have died of lung cancer because Edward Bernays did such a successful job of convincing women, propagandizing them, they should start smoking. We never saw women with the cancer of the lung when I went through medical school. And now, of course, it's one of the most common causes of women dying. Well, we can thank Edward Bernays for that, but what about how many people has he killed by encouraging water fluoridation, because there's so many problems with water fluoridation. Are you acquainted with the work by Dr. Roger Masters back there at Dartmouth?
Yes, I am.
Could you
talk to
our listeners, because that is one of the most incredible stories.
Yeah, well, Roger Masters is a professor in government at Dartmouth College. He's a professor emeritus there. Very distinguished. I think he graduated top of his class from Harvard and a recipient of many, many awards. But as I say, he worked in government. His particular interest was the impact of toxic substances on crime. You know, lead, manganese are thought to be related to the increase in crime. And if you actually reduce lead in the environment, you see a comparable reduction in crime. So he was very interested in lead because of that factor. Then he met up with an engineer from Massachusetts, a guy called Myron Copeland. And Myron was an engineer who had actually worked for many years for the phosphate fertilizer industry. So he knew all about silicon fluorides and their toxicity. And I've forgotten exactly why they came into contact, but they found data from Massachusetts on lead levels in children's blood, and they decided to look to see if there was any relationship between the blood lead levels in these children in Massachusetts. I mean, there were about 240,000. It was a very, very big sample, and whether or not the communities in which they lived were fluoridated.
Yep.
And what they found is they didn't find a correlation in the communities using sodium fluoride and lead in children's blood, but they found a correlation, an association, between the communities using silicon fluorides and blood lead level in the children. And then a couple of years later, they repeated this with this data from New York State. So that they have a huge amount of data which shows this relationship. And in other studies, they've also found a relationship between silicon fluorides and crime, violent crime.
And, of course, for our listeners, what they do is this hydrofluosilicic acid they're adding to the water, and they're not fluoridating with sodium fluoride. 90% of the water is fluoridated with this silicon fluoride, not with sodium fluoride. And it's in those areas there's increased crime. Is that a correct statement?
Yeah, that's what they found. I think that the really solid stuff is blood lead levels in children, but that would certainly relate to the increase in crime as well, even if the other studies had not panned out.
But now, how do we get increased lead levels in the blood of the children? Because lead is a deadly neurotoxin, has a terrible effect on the brain. How do we get the increased lead levels if we're fluoridating the water?
There's two possibilities here, and I don't think they've settled on one over the other. But subsequent to their studies, there have been studies which shows that hexafluorosilicic acid, which is one of these compounds, in combination particularly with chloramine, increases the dissolution of lead from brass fittings. You know that you join pipes with these brass fittings, but there's some lead in those brass fittings. And it turns out that hexafluorosilicic acid and chloramine, but all the fluoridating agents actually increase the dissolution of lead. But that particular combination, chloramine and hexafluorosilicic acid, is the most potent at dissolving lead from these brass fittings. Sadly, the guy that led that research from North Carolina, Richard Mars, has since died. Died from a rare disease in his 40s, which is really, really sad. So that's one possibility. The other possibility is that fluoride complexes with all kinds of metal ions, including lead. And the possibility is that the silicon fluorides or some complex formed by the silicon fluoride is also complexing with the lead, possibly in the stomach itself, and increasing the uptake of lead into the children's bloodstream by that mechanism.
Well, I think the significant thing is that the level of crime in these areas where they have used this hydrofluosilicic acid goes up. And their ultimate study was 450,000 children, so they had a pretty good study of it there. Well, we can't let the American people know that. What are we doing to the minds of our children? Because, of course, the lead, level of lead is up in the blood. It's also up in the brain. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Dr. Paul Conant. And, Chris, I know that certainly Dr. Roger Masters was really concerned about the crime and the rising levels of crime and its association with of course, the blood levels of lead and the blood that because apparently when you get this lead encephalopathy, why, of course, you go into fits of rage and homicide and all sorts of crimes are associated with people with lead in their in the brains. Is that to be a fair assessment?
Yeah, it's a relationship with dopamine. There's no argument, absolutely none, that lead impacts the brain, and I don't think there's any argument today that increased lead in the brain increases violent behavior. None at all. I think it's not finally proven, and it's certainly controversial, that hexafluorosilicic acid, as a fluoridating agent, is increasing lead in the brain. But it's certainly something that should be resolved, as are many of these suspected consequences of drinking fluoridated water all your life, including increased hip fractures, including arthritis, lowering of thyroid function, and so on. Incidentally, as far as the Chinese, Iranian, Mexican, and Indian studies are concerned, that lowering of IQ does not appear to have anything to do with lead, because that was controlled for in at least one Chinese study. And all of these studies of lowering IQ around the world have come from natural fluoride, and there's no suggestion that this is being compounded by the presence of lead. So this hexafluorosilicic acid issue is on top of the fact that even the bare fluoride ion can lower IQ and cause brain damage.
So it's sort of a 1-2 attack on the brains of these helpless children who have no idea what's going on, and so many of them certainly will grow up and get involved in crime and other things and not even, perhaps even understand why they fly into fits of rage or simply seem to have lost their moral conscience. Is anything being done to popularize Dr. Roger Masters' work? Because other than talking to you and my friend Dr. Kennedy, I've never heard this anyplace mentioned.
No, there's very little investigative journalism on the whole fluoride front. That's what makes the Scientific American article of January 2008 stand out very starkly. The only other place where there's been serious discussion of fluoride's impacts on health has been in Chemical and Engineering News.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Paul Conant. And certainly, before we go on, Dr. Conant, I'd like you to get your website out, tell people, what the site is and why they should go there.
Well, there's a lot of really important things on this site. It's fluoridealert.org, fluoridealert, one word, .org. Fluoride is spelled F-L-U, think of flu, fluoridealert.org. At the top, they're going to find a link to a very interesting five-minute statement from Dr. Bill Osmondson from Washington, and he has a practice in both Washington State and Oregon. Lovely fellow, promoted fluoridation for 25 years, or so, is now spent the last few years opposing it. And this short video, which has already been watched by over 14,000 people, spells out why we should not be fluoridating the water. So that's very good. Also on that website, you'll see the professional statement, over 1,480 professionals now calling for an end of fluoridation worldwide. We're looking for more signers. Also an online message to the U.S. Congress, which says that people support this professional statement and are calling for congressional hearings on this issue, because a lot of federal agencies are not doing their job on this as they should, and that includes the EPA, the CDC, and the FDA. Perhaps we can talk more about that in a moment. Also, on the left-hand side, you'll find the latest news section, which my wife updates every day. We publish news items on this issue from around the world, from Australia, from New Zealand, from Ireland, from England, from Canada, from Israel, from throughout the United States, all over the world, any in India, China. Any time as a newspaper article, we manage to get it up there and keep it there. It's a wonderful archive, because if you go to websites, you only can access them for a few days and they disappear, but they're permanently on our website. Also, there's a data health database there, which goes through the impacts of fluoride by tissue, and also a huge bibliography you can find within that health database. So our site is largely scientifically based. There's some argumentation there, but it's pretty transparent where we're coming from. And I really resent people that try to dismiss the concerns about fluoride and say, oh, well, it's all on the Internet. You can't trust anything on the Internet, as if, you know, obviously you have to pick and choose. But if a scientific study has been published in a peer-reviewed, published in a peer-reviewed journal, it doesn't lose its credibility just because it is cited and discussed on an Internet site. As I say, you've got to pick and choose. But most of our studies that we cite, and most of the things that we cite, are scientifically based and referenced up the gazoo.
And well, I would say to the listeners, I've been on to most of the Internet sites, and this is by far the best Internet site and the most reliable Internet site on the subject of water fluoridation. So it's very authoritative. I recommend it to you, fluoridealert.org. Well, you were going to say something about the Environmental Protection Agency, because there are a lot of people who work for the Environmental Protection Agency. We've talked to some of them. We're frightened to death that we're poisoning the American people. I know Bill Hersey, and they even have a website. The employees trying to get the American people to understand that they're being poisoned, and not a word of it in the media. Would you like to talk a little bit about the EPA and the CDC?
Yeah, absolutely. We have the union in Washington, D.C. headquarters, but you've mentioned, I think, Dr. Bill Hersey and others who have been steadfast in their opposition to fluoridation. They know what a scam it is. They know that people have been threatened. Actually, people have been sacked at the EPA because they've spoken too loudly about the dangers, and other people have been told categorically to write the regulations protecting fluoride. So there's a lot of anger at the EPA about this threat to the integrity. And meanwhile, we have this situation where the National Research Council concluded that the safe drinking water standard should be lowered from the current 4 parts per million. The margin of safety, in my view, between adding fluoride at 1 part per million and telling communities that they have to remove it above 4 parts per million, that there was no adequate margin of safety there from a standard toxicological point of view. Now that the NRC has told the EPA that they should lower that standard, there will be even less margin of safety. In fact, it disappears. There is no margin of safety to protect everyone in society. But here, so that was March 22nd, 2006. Here we are, nearly 23 months later, and the EPA has done nothing, not a squat, nothing to do this, to do a new health risk assessment, to determine a new safe drinking water standard. And the reason, I think, is pretty clear, Dr. Stan. Those people in the water division know that if they do the science properly, they're going to come back with the maximum contaminant level goal. That's the best science in terms of protecting everyone that you can come up with. The MCLG will have to be less than 1 part per million. It could be very close to zero, the MCLG, the guideline. And if they do that, it ends fluoridation overnight. And if they do that, the U.S. Public Health Service is going to be down on those individuals that come up with this calculation, like the like a guillotine. I mean, they're going to crush those people. I mean, they're going to be out of work. And that's why we need congressional hearings, because we need Congress to say to these individuals in the water division, just do your job. Let the science take you where it may, and we will protect you. We in Congress are demanding that you do a scientific job, and you are protected by us. So heaven help the agency that tries to sack you or take away your pension or whatever else they will try to do to you. We won't let it happen. That's why we need congressional hearings. That's why we need people out there to sign their online message to Congress, which is calling for congressional hearings. Not only do we need to put people from the EPA under oath, but we need people from the CDC under oath to explain why they continue to promote it, this practice, even though the National Research Council report is on the table, and the CDC has not addressed that NRC report scientifically, and yet they continue at every turn to promote fluoridation, including supporting mandatory fluoridation on a statewide basis, which is on the books right now in Pennsylvania. And we need those people under oath as to why they continue to do that. And thirdly, we need the FDA under oath to explain why they have never regulated fluoride as a drug, even though it's the most prescribed medicine in the United States. They have never conducted the same kind of double-blind, randomized control of fluoride that they would be required to do for both safety and effectiveness if this was any other drug. And as I say, this is the most prescribed medication in U.S. history, and the FDA has done nothing to protect the American public. So the EPA currently is not doing its job protecting the public. The CDC is doing the very opposite, threatening the public health. The FDA is doing nothing. And guess what? Guess who is left holding the bag when it comes to assuring Water Department officials that these chemicals are safe? Guess who is left doing that, Dr. Stan?
I don't know who's left doing it.
It's the National Sanitation Foundation International. This is a private entity. This whole business of protecting the health from fluoride has been outsourced. The NSF is the black water of fluoridation. They are the ones who assure, they provide cover for the chemical companies and assure the water officials that they have certified this chemical, which by California law should also include providing the toxicological studies to demonstrate safety, and they're not doing it. And this was recently challenged, this whole notion of the NSF providing this safety, rubber stamp, if you like, for safety, was challenged in Southern California by the guy, I can't even pronounce his name, but the Los Angeles County Supervisor has asked the NSF to provide the evidence of safety for the fluoridation chemicals, which in their case is hexafluorosilicic acid, and they refused to do it. They said, we're a private company, and this is private. This is private. So here we've got nobody protecting the public health of citizens drinking fluoridated water because the EPA doesn't do it. And it's not doing its job with the new health risk assessment. The CDC is not doing it, the very opposite. The FDA has never done it. As I say, it's left to a private company, and they are right now. And if people want to check that out, by the way, they can go to our website, go down and find the Topanga Messenger from January 31st. There's an article in the Topanga Messenger, January 31st. It puts the Los Angeles Times to shame. That major newspaper stood by and let 18 million people be fluoridated in Southern California, just as they stood by when Los Angeles was being fluoridated. They didn't do any kind of investigative journalism. And now we're left with this small newspaper, the Topanga Messenger. They should win a Pulitzer Prize for what they've just done. But you'll find that out if you go to the latest news section on our website, floridaalert.org, and check down. You have to go down quite a considerable way, but look for the date, January the 31st, and it's a shocking state of affairs which is revealed by them.
Well, you know, one of the things I remember reading in the book, Fluoride Alert, they were talking about the original studies that were done in Newburgh and the other community, and that the girls, of course, who were raised in the areas where water was fluoridated, they began their menses about 6 to 8 months earlier than the girls in the other area, which would mean that there was some sort of a physiological action on their pineal gland and their pituitary gland. Why wasn't anybody concerned about that? Because now all across America, girls are, some of them are beginning to menstruate at 8 years of age and developing secondary sexual yep. characteristics. Obviously, something is affecting these girls, and we know that fluoride, at least by this double study with two communities comparing them, and why doesn't anybody ever talk about that?
Well, it's a very, very good point that you raise, and let's be very specific about this. This is the study that was published after a 10-year trial in Newburgh, Kingston, New York. Newburgh was fluoridated and Kingston wasn't, and the young girls in the fluoridated community were menstruating on average 5 months earlier than the young girls in the control city, Kingston. They had that in black and white in their report, but they didn't consider it significant at the time. You've got to remember that at this time, the U.S. Public Health Service is trying to validate what they were already promoting. They didn't want to find a problem. And every step of the way, that study was overseen by Dr. Harold Hodge, who at that time was the chief toxicologist of the Manhattan Project. And their interest in this was to collect all the information they could about low-level health effects. I'm not sure that we ever saw the full details of this. This is just one of those things which slipped through the cracks. It has become visible recently because, as you suggested, this might reflect the fact that fluoride accumulates in the human pineal gland, something that was discovered in 1997 by Dr. Jennifer Luke. In fact, she got a PhD, passed a PhD thesis doing this work. She showed that that fluoride accumulated in the human pineal gland, and in animal studies, she's found that indeed the animals treated with fluoride had lower melatonin levels, which is the hormone produced, very important hormone produced by the pineal gland, and it also resulted in the animals menstruating, reaching puberty earlier in her study, which is totally consistent with lowering melatonin levels, by the way. And since she did that, she published that work on the human side, the accumulation in the human pineal gland, in 2001. And do you know, Dr. Stan, that not one single country that fluoridates its water has pursued that study, has attempted to reproduce it. It's been totally ignored. It wasn't ignored by the National Research Council, but, of course, it's since been ignored by the Center of Disease Control and all these other people. There's so much politics, sickening, sickening politics operating here against the public health interest of the citizens of this country. And I am so glad that more and more doctors and dentists are having the guts to speak out against their professions, against the ADA, against the AMA, who continue to pimp this practice.
Well, what about heart disease? Because, you know, this is, I've heard some reference to the fact that it seems to be that there's an increase of heart disease in the areas that are fluoridated. Is there any truth to that?
Well, it's certainly highly plausible because one of the things which fluoride seems to do is to concentrate in the heart muscle, and it interferes with calcium. And in fact, we know the outright, if you have outright fluoride poisoning, in other words, if you're killed by fluoride because you've had a huge dose, and that wouldn't come from drinking fluoridated water, but if you're an industrial exposure or you swallowed rat poison or something, the way that fluoride kills you is to shut down the heart muscle. And it comes about because fluoride interferes with calcium, and calcium is so important at controlling the neuromuscular junction, which in this case is the heart muscle. So, you know, you always have to work backwards from high doses or accidents, industrial accidents or human accidents or high-level animal studies. You have to work backwards and make then the conjecture, well, if high doses shut down the heart muscle. What do low doses do? Could that increase, you know, heart disease? And I don't think the literature on that is as strong as some of the other issues. But, you know, if you take a step back a moment, you put on one scale pan a possible reduction saving of 0.6 of one tooth surface out of 100 tooth surfaces in a child's mouth. We're talking permanent tooth surfaces now. You put that in one scale pan, a possible saving of 0.6 of one tooth surface on average of children 5 to 17. You put that in one scale pan, and in the other scale pan, you put in the first symptom of fluoride damaging of bones is like arthritis. The lowering of thyroid function. We have millions of people with hyperthyroidism in this country. We don't know why. We have, and of course, the symptoms which go with that are devastating, including obesity, lethargy, and so on. The lowering of IQ. The impact on the pineal gland. The possible increase of bone fractures, including hip fractures in the elderly, which is so devastating. You know, if you present that to the average person and they say, oh, yeah, well, I think it's certainly worthwhile to go after reducing tooth decay.
Well, I'm going to have to interrupt you there. We'll be right back in just a moment. Now you can go right ahead with what you've been saying. I'm sorry, but we have to take those breaks.
The whole thing, Dr. Stan, is so preposterous. And as you, I think you alluded to it before, although I don't think you gave the full reference. There was a brilliant book published in 2004. By Chris Bryson, a former BBC correspondent. It took him 10 years to write. This is The Fluoride Deception. And I interviewed Chris Bryson at the time in 2004. And that 28-minute videotape we have with Chris is absolutely devastating. I think it's being watched now by over 100,000 people.
Well, where is that available?
Yeah, like? you could. It's on Google.
All right,
you can
fine.
Get it via Google. But you can also get it from our homepage. If you go to FluorideAlert.org and go down to about the 9th or 10th item, it says, I think the heading is online videos. And there are quite a number of them now, really good ones. But that one is the best. The interview with Chris Bryson is surely the best videotape out there and goes a long way to 100 pages of documentation. That book is two books. The first book is the narrative. The second book is the footnotes. There's 100 pages of them explaining all his resources. But it clearly shows the collusion between members of the U.S. Public Health Service and the lawyers that were defending industry from lawsuits, the Fluorine Lawyers Association. I mean, let's say it loud and clear. There was collusion between members of the U.S. Public Health Service promoting fluoridation and the Fluorine Lawyers Association, which was protecting various industries from lawsuits on fluoride contamination of the environment and possible fluoride damage to their own workers.
And I think it's so very important that people get the book. We actually carry this. It's available through Radio Liberty. People have to understand that this has been one of the greatest cover-ups of all time. But what are we doing to the minds of our children? What are we doing to the reproduction of our children? What is the incidence of Down syndrome? My understanding is that Down syndrome actually increases, you know, in areas with fluoridated water. Is that correct?
Well, you know, there's certainly some solid evidence to that effect, but it brings up another issue. Since the very beginning, scientists who have found a problem have been denigrated and persecuted, going back from the Taylors, man and wife, Taylors from Texas, found that the mice who were that were prone to cancer, their lives were shortened when they were exposed to fluoride. They went all out to denigrate Taylor.
We're going to have to interrupt you here. We're out of time, yes. But can we get you on again sometime soon? I think it's great.
Yes, you bet. Let's pick it up with persecution of science.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course we've had a wonderful, wonderful time with Dr. Connor. Dr. Connor, thank you so much. We want to get you on again sometime real soon.
Thank you, Dr. Monteith.
Bye-bye. And of course, Dr. Connor has got a great, great website. If you haven't been there, fluoridealert.org. And then if you want to go to the website of the scientists at the Environmental Protection Agency, Their website is www.nteu280.org. NTEU280.org. They're desperate to let the American people know that they're being poisoned, that your children are being poisoned, and you're not going to hear about this. The media is covering this up completely, and you have to ask yourself why. Well, of course, we have some wonderful material. We have 2 4-tape sets on this subject. We certainly have several interviews with Dr. Paul Conant. We have an interview with Dr. Roger Masters from Dartmouth and the story of the increased lead levels in the blood in those areas where they're fluoridating with hydrofluorosilicic acid. Give us a call. Get this material, the 4-tape or 4-CD sets on fluoride and fluoride update, and then into the other talks. Today's talk was amazing, the information you got. Our number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We actually have the book, The Fluoride Deception, by a BBC correspondent who spent 10 years researching the book. Excellent. We actually have my talk on the hidden agenda. And, of course, it gives you the whole background of the fluoride scam. And there's an excellent syllabus. You need to get the syllabus because it has the articles out of the magazine Fluoride. It has the articles from the CDC that tells you that it doesn't do any good to ingest the fluoridated water. It all acts locally. You have to understand you've been lied to, and they're destroying the minds of our children. And then, of course, we have 2 other excellent DVDs put out by our good friend, Dr. David Kennedy. And simply you can just call in if you want to order them. We think they're both well worthwhile. Those are other DVDs other than the talk I give on the hidden agenda, because there is a hidden agenda. There really are people who want to attack the fertility of the American people. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, this fluoride decreases the fertility of animals, and it decreases the fertility of human beings. And increases the incidence of Down's disease. You'll see the articles out of the Fluoride magazine, at least the abstracts from Fluoride magazine, which they were kind enough to give us permission to reproduce. So all of these items are available at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. That is the 4-tape or 4-CD sets on fluoride and fluoride update, then the book, Fluoride Deception, and then my talk on the hidden agenda, and the syllabus goes with that, and then Dr. Kennedy's tapes, and you'll actually see the children in China in the areas where they're fluoridated and non-fluoridated water in there, and the areas where the water is not fluoridated, the children are happy, and these were shot just recently, and then the children in the areas where the water was fluoridated and sort of dull and unresponsive, and all the difference in the world. Shocking to realize what they're doing to our children. There are letters there from the public health services all throughout Europe saying, why would anybody in their right mind want to fluoridate water? We wouldn't fluoridate our water. A letter from the public health minister of India saying, why would anybody want to fluoridate water? We're trying to get the fluoride out of our water. Do you know a better way to destroy a great nation than to poison the people? People say, oh, that couldn't be happening, but are you certain? If there really is organized evil in the world, as we profess, if we are involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men, how about their bodies? How about their minds? Well, ladies and gentlemen, you go to our website, radioliberty.com. If you want to get in touch with us, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are under attack today.